Hello, everyone. This is Mary Sutherland, BUFO Radio, and tonight we have with us Dr. Brooks Agnew. And welcome to the show, Brooks.
Thank you, Mary. Good to be on.
Number three show. Three times you've been on.
I know.
You're getting to be a regular.
The first radio program I was on way back in 2005 was your program.
Way back when, huh? And
you
now
started it all.
And what a great book. Now, you've got Volume 2 out now on Ark of the Millionaires, right?
Oh, Volume 3 is out. It came out last July.
Really?
Why
am I ever behind times?
It went to number 17 on Amazon, so it really shot up there.
And now you're going to be bringing all your books to the Burlington Vortex Conference October 30th, 31st, and November 1st. And because you're going to be one of the speakers here, and you're going to be doing a meet and greet with the people in between talks. Am I correct on that?
Oh, yeah.
I hope so, because I'm going to be buying your ticket hopefully tomorrow. Okay, I'm just going to write down this. People can find this at burlingtonnews.net, Burlington Vortex Conference. Okay, and they can just go right there and click on they can click on tickets, and it'll give them all the information on your schedule, as well as how much the tickets are going to be. We had a friend of ours, Mark Eniper, that contacted you about purchasing a ticket for the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition.
Wow, and, that's great.
Yeah, and so anyhow, you've already got tickets. Well, tickets sold whenever you guys are ready to get the ticket, I guess. You want to tell people about the, first of all, we'll get started with your North Pole. Well, how do you want to get started? Do you want to talk about the North Pole Earth Inner
sure,
Earth
yeah,
Expedition
we can talk
first?
About that first.
Okay.
Yeah.
How are you guys doing with that?
It's coming along. The scientific team, we had it put together, and then because we've been delayed another year, people have to understand it's a very, very small window that we have to hit each year in order to make this voyage happen. There's only 6 weeks each summer that these ships make these voyages up above the Arctic Circle. There are only two ships, and last year, which would have been this year's cruise, there was only one ship because one was in dry dock, and it's a nuclear-powered icebreaker, so it's a significant amount of repairs and upgrades that have to be done to it, and it will be back in the water next year. So it is... It was a challenge to find a ship, I'll put it that way. We went to several cruise lines. We went through several brokers. We thought we had a 500-passenger ship, and that was looking really good. In fact, we thought it was easier to sell 500 tickets for a cruise than it was 100 tickets because the ticket price drops significantly. The problem is that the Russians would not let the ship sail north of the 81st parallel, which is just south of the Siberian Islands. And we have to go to the 86th parallel. So that was about 350 miles short of where we wanted to be. So we are right back in the Russians' laps. And we don't mind working with them. It's just that they realize that they have the only two ships that can make this journey, and they charge for it. So it is, it's a $2 million voyage for 100 people. So you can see that if we sold tickets, if we booked it up, we would just have a boat full of rich tourists. We would not have scientists and filmmakers and artists and the kind of people that we think we need to put together a really great voyage. So that's the challenge.
And tell the folks... what we're expecting to find up there?
Well, that's a tough question. When we came up with the hypothesis to try to prove or disprove the theory that planets form as hollow balls, it stimulated a lot of experiments, not just oceanographic ones, because one of the legends is that sea level is not sea level up there, that there's a giant... we'll call it a giant valley in the sea. They call it the Oceanic Depression. And measuring that was a real technical challenge to design a test that would measure whether or not we were actually sailing into an oceanic depression. We couldn't do a GPS. We couldn't do a sonar off the bottom. So the design actually requires a precision gyroscope. Now, this gyroscope is not the kind that you find in airplanes. It's the kind you find on spacecraft. It's also the kind that you find that aim missiles. So it's really hard to get your hands on one of those these days. So we have to use a Russian model, and we're going to modify it to get the resolution out of it that we need. And then we will link that with the ship's forward motion, and we will see if we can measure the edge of the oceanic depression. If we do that, it's going to be an oceanographic breakthrough. The next thing is, if there is a vent in the sea floor, that means two oceans are mixing, and that means different kinds of sea life are going to show up, not only microscopic, but even more complex life. The sea chemistry is going to be different. The salinity, the crystallinity, the conductivity, all of these samples have to be taken and tested on the ship.
This area's never been researched before.
It's never been sailed before. It's always been covered with ice.
Okay.
In 2006, they had a very strange wind come up, and it blew the thick ice out into the warm water and dissolved it. And in 2007, the Northwest Passage opened for the first time in perhaps 100,000 years. In 2008, it began refreezing, and the icebreakers can still make it through. In 2009, they had the winter of 2008-2009, they had absolute record ice flow. Over 10,000 acres, 10,000 square miles a day was refreezing. And it looks like the Arctic cap is going to come back in full strength and even be bigger than it ever was before. 2010 is probably going to be the last year that this area can be sailed. And then it's going to be 4 to 6 meters deep in ice again. And it'll be covered for another 100,000 years. So this is a rare, rare opportunity to see a portion of the planet Earth that has never been seen by human eyes.
And like you said, you've got a very small window.
Because
if you don't get it done by next year, then you won't be able to do it.
Correct. And no one will. It'll never be done. And, you know, people have asked me, you know, why hasn't this ever been done before? Or everyone knows that Earth is not hollow. You know, the truth is that the evidence points to a hollow planet, at least the space-based evidence, seismological evidence, and marine evidence. Seismological, let me just tell you that story. It's pretty short. Dr. Y. Sessions with Washington University and his grad students went through 600,000 seismograms that were generated by the USGS, that's the U.S. Geological Survey. Since the mid-90s, all those listening stations around the Earth have been linked together by Internet, and they've been getting faster and faster every single year, and they're getting better at sort of doing a CAT scan of the Earth every time there's a major earthquake. It sends the vibrations through the planet. The other listening stations pick up those vibrations, and because they're all connected, they can kind of do a picture of what the inside of the Earth looks like. They've been trying to fit it to the old plate tectonic solid core molten middle of the Earth model, and it doesn't fit. What does fit is a crust about 900 to 1,000 miles thick, a certain portion of open space, which may be air, it could be very light, extremely light molecular weight material, and then a very dense solid core. And the core and the crust are rotating at different speeds, which creates this tremendous magnetosphere we have around our planet. And what they found as they examined these seismograms is they discovered another ocean the size of the Atlantic Ocean underneath the Atlantic Ocean. And they published it. And that stood the whole world on its ear right there. But it fit hollow Earth theory perfectly.
And where did they publish it at?
They published it in a peer review paper, and then of all places, it came out in Drudge Report, in the Washington Post. It came out in the L.A. Times. It was so famous. It was published in every major newspaper in the world.
So, like, if a person wanted to Google it, they could probably find something on the Internet?
Yep. All you have to do is put in Washington University, Dr. Y Sessions, W-Y-E-S-E-S-S-I-O-N-S, and they'll find it.
Huh. So there's going to be, like you said, entire new marine life in that one ocean that we haven't, that we never even knew about. And then this ocean this ocean connects to somehow, it's flowing into this ocean that we know of?
Well, on the light end of the theory,
where the two comes together, and that's where you're planning on going? Am I understanding this correctly?
Right.
Okay.
Now, the oceanic depression is a well-known maritime phenomenon, even in the U.S. Navy. I interviewed some very senior and existing and retired Navy personnel, and they're familiar with it. However, the Navy's theory is that this is an area of very intense gravity and actually pulls the ocean down deeper. But in my discussions with them, I said, no, that really doesn't make any sense, because if there was more gravity there, the ocean would actually pile up in that place. It wouldn't sink down. What you're really seeing is an area in the crust where gravity is very light, and the normal gravity in a halo around this light area is pulling the water back the same way the moon pulls our ocean around to make our tides. And upon reflection, they said, you know what? You are right. That is exactly what is happening. If that's the case, then it supports the idea that gravity is not in the center of the Earth. It's in the center of the crust.
Huh. And this is the area you're going to. You're just going to be testing this ocean, or is there going to be an entrance to the inner Earth there, or?
Now that's a big question. That's sort of the Indiana Jones aspect of this voyage. If there is an anomaly, like not just a depression, not just a rift 4,400 meters below the sea in the ocean floor, but we're actually talking about a water tunnel that goes down through the ocean, down through the crust, and into the interior of the Earth. We're going to get that on film. We're going to fly over it with a helicopter. We're going to sail around it in a smaller ship that's part of the Yamal, which is this nuclear-powered icebreaker. And the world is going to see it when we see it, because we're going to be broadcasting live from the ship 24 hours a day.
Well, are you going to be having like a little mini sub with you? So
no, not a mini sub, but there's another ship, another boat on the boat that can carry 30 people that can actually make excursions out from the main ship. The main ship's 450 feet long, and it's 23,000 tons. But there is a helicopter on the ship, and there's another boat on the ship, so we can make air and sea excursions from the main ship to try to gather some of this information. And if we find an opening like that, that's going to be the most incredible find in the history of the world.
Oh, God, yes. But I'm trying to visualize this. But this is an ocean that's going to be on an ocean.
Yes.
Right? You wouldn't be able to, how would you see that ocean that's under our ocean by flying over it?
Well, that, I don't think you'd be able to see it unless you went through the opening into the interior of the Earth.
Right, and that you'd have to use a mini sub or something, right? Or how
not
would you get in there?
Well, the theory is that this opening is not small. It's you know, several miles across, and maybe as much as 80 or 100 miles across. So if water follows the contour of the crust, because it's held to it by the gravity of the Earth, you can sail right into it with a ship.
Oh, okay. I'm starting to understand now.
See, on the ocean, you only have about 8 to 10 miles of perspective because of the curvature of the Earth.
Right.
So if you sailed straight into an opening that was 80 miles across, you'd never see it. You would just think you were sailing on sea level. The only thing that would change is the sky.
Oh, really? And what would the sky look like?
Well, at that time of year, you are sailing in the time of the midnight sun.
Right.
The sun doesn't go around. It doesn't go down. It makes a 360-degree circle around you just above the horizon.
Uh-huh.
If you sailed into the interior of the Earth, the sun would go down.
Oh, God. You know, I just... Isn't that... that's so fascinating. And of course, you guys have been trying to put this together for, I mean, this is a big project. I mean, you know, you've been trying to get this thing put together for years now. And of course, you know, I can totally, I'm starting to understand how come this is a very big project.
It is a big project.
If this works, I mean, forget about discoveries of Mars and Venus and all these places. I mean, what you're going to open up to the world is something a lot more remarkable, as far as I'm concerned.
And you know, there's some aspect of this I really didn't expect when I was appointed to be the expedition leader in 2006. Because the previous expedition leader died very unexpectedly. We knew that 2007 was out because I wasn't appointed until October, and there was just no way to raise that much money by December.
Mm-hmm.
So we really set our sights on 2008, and we really thought we had it. We thought we were going to make it. We were dealing with some Hollywood producers because we thought that... the value of the film, the value of the footage, the rarity of the event would make a great film. So we thought we could raise the money in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we did not know that the entire world would be plunged into a very bad economy.
Right.
Now it seems to be pulling out, but we have pulled away from Hollywood. There is not the kind of money in Hollywood there once was. So we are approaching this from a purely scientific standpoint with film as the secondary motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having a lot better success.
So you're going with grants and things like
strategy.
That? Are you going with grants?
We have, you know, looked at the National Science Foundation. We have changed our funding strategy. We're using things like social networks to reach out to millions of people so that, you know, $1 or $2 from each person and we'd have enough money to do it. We produced a pilot film. We aired it in Japan. 17,000 Japanese saw that film and were very, very excited by that film. So we think that we can just access bigger masses and do more awareness and thus lighten the load on using more people to kind of bear the burden, and then it becomes no burden to anyone.
Uh-huh.
And it seems to be working. We're finally getting some momentum going, and there's not so much ego into it like there would be if we were using big investors or benefactors. They would want to make the project their own and put their name all over it and, you know, have their corporate name and their benefit from it in more ways than we're willing to do. So now it becomes the people's project. And I think, Mary, that's what it was always supposed to be in the first place.
I think you're right, Brooks. I really do. Well, you know, that's you're kind of doing it the Obama way, aren't you?
Well, you know, Obama raised over $650 million using social networks. Mm-hmm. We only need two.
Yeah. And so basically all you need is a fairly decent workforce behind you to just get the word out. Get everybody
Correct.
Talking.
We have got a real nice little Facebook widget that gives people video and pictures, and my gosh, 50 cents a piece on those. All the people that know about this project, we'd have our money in 2 weeks.
And have you got the Facebook site up yet?
Yes, the Facebook site is up. It's called nippie.org. It's North Pole Inner Earth Expedition, NPIEE.org.
Okay.
So if you just go to Facebook and search that out, there's a widget on there. It won't cost you a thing to put it on your profile. It just keeps spreading and spreading and spreading. If we get 200,000 profiles with that widget on it, we'll have our money.
Well, that's a good idea. I'm going to go over, after we get done tonight, I'm going to go over there and check that out. And I ask everybody else to get over there and check this out. I mean, be part of history, you know. This is what it's all about, is the people doing it, you know. And
it's a completely non-profit effort. No one is on salary. No one's on staff. We're all volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do it this way and we make it the people's project and it comes out the way we think it should, it may even have an effect on world peace. It may bring people together like that. There's a very high spiritual aspect to this expedition. And we don't downplay that at all. We think it's a very, very strong, very important part of the expedition.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's going to be amazing what you guys are going to find up there. I mean, do you have any idea at all what to expect? You know, as far
as you know, there's the minor things like new sea life, or you know, the evidence that there is an inner ocean, those kinds of things, geological things, maybe the source of the aurora borealis. But then you know there's a whole culture that believes there's a civilization that lives on the interior of the earth, that there are animals and jungles and, you know, Admiral Byrd stories and Edmund Halley's stories, Edda Dorfa and the Smoky God and all of, there's a culture that goes with this. Hundreds and, well, maybe not hundreds, but certainly dozens of books written on the subject, and they're all pretty compelling. So the idea is that maybe we're being visited from other worlds, or maybe there are ancient civilizations that once lived on this planet that are very advanced that live here but don't interact with us. They choose not to.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that if we put our ship and our very special crew with a very high consciousness in a very remote place, hundreds and hundreds of miles from the nearest flashlight battery, and we are the only conscious signal out there in the middle of the ocean, that maybe they will come to see us. And if that happens, we're going to get it on film, and everyone is going to see it live.
Yeah. Now, is it this area where Admiral Byrd was?
Yes.
It is.
Admiral Byrd would have flown over this area at 2,500 feet off the ice, which is why he's an aviation hero and not a statistic.
So
we can't get anybody to fly that low.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, we tried to get pilots to fly us over this area, and the lowest they will fly is 17,000 feet.
Oh, and why is that? Because of the ice peaks?
Well, when you're flying at 500 miles an hour, your first mistake is your last.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't want to fly in an area that has incredible magnetic anomalies that play with the navigation equipment on the jet. You really have to fly by the seat of your pants to fly over this area. It's also constantly covered with clouds. We looked at over 30 satellite photographs in 2006, and it's all clouds all the time. We have one photograph that's an oblique angle that shows a very interesting ion wall that seems to line up with where an opening would be. And it's a genuine picture.
And can you get the latitude and longitude of that area? Do they? You can?
Mm-hmm.
Will you?
Sure. It's 86 degrees north, 146 east.
Okay.
That puts you right smack in the middle of Russian waters.
And you can't see that with a Google, or can you see this area with Google satellite?
The world needs to know that Google Earth, above the 60th parallel, is all animated.
Oh.
There is no publicly available photographs of the Earth from space above the 60th parallel. It is not legal.
Why is that?
Because of the Data Denial Act. The Data Denial Act in February of 2006 was passed by the U.S. and then adopted in 2007 by the world community.
And what is that?
And that is an act, and I'll try to quote it as best I can. The NOAA and EUMETSAT, which is the European version of the NOAA, cannot make available any images from weather or imaging satellites during times of conflict or war.
Well, gosh, that's any time. Right?
You get it, don't you? That's why there are no images available.
And basically, they just don't want anybody seeing that area up there, right?
Well, some people say that, and when we inquire to people who are Defense Department consultants, they say it's so that our enemies cannot program their cruise missiles with imagery to come over the ice caps down into our territory.
And we just kind of got to go on faith basis alone that they're not doing that already.
Oh, I'm sure the government shares with us everything they know.
Yeah, right. How we wish, huh? Boy, it would make our work a lot less, huh? If they would share. But
secrets. Too many secrets.
Way too many secrets. I was reading about your company's putting or manufacturing an electric car or a diesel car of some sort. What is this? Green car?
Global Green Cars is manufacturing electric vehicles. These are not hybrids per se. They are all electric vehicles. And we just finished our 2010 model pickup truck. You can see it on our website. And before Christmas, we will have our 2010 commuter car finished.
Boy, you're just kind of a busy guy, aren't you? Huh?
Well, you know, we're only here for 100 years or so, so we got to get everything done.
I guess that's what you call multitasking.
I worked in the automotive industry a little over 23 years, and I retired from it. Not because I wasn't making good living. It's because I got tired of every single car maker producing cars that did not get better than 30 miles per gallon, and I knew they could do better.
Uh-huh.
So in 2006, I started looking for alternative energy and high-efficiency companies. I went through, well over 100 companies, and I really didn't find any that had any technology that was ready for prime time, except one company. And I teamed up with them. We built a new high-tech biodiesel plant up in Washington State last year, and that's still up and running. It's still going great, still makes the best biodiesel in the country. And then fuel prices went through the roof. I mean, higher than I've ever seen them in my life. And the value of electric vehicle technology made itself known. So In April of this year, we dragged out a 1994 Geo that was all electric, cleaned it up, put new batteries in it, new tires on it, drove it around the country, and made the front page of every newspaper that in every town we stopped. So evidently we started a fire, because just about every car maker the next month announced that they were coming out with electric cars. Of course, I spent two decades in that industry, and I can tell you every single one of them was lying through their teeth, because they weren't coming out with an electric car. So we decided to push ahead, build this company, and we went around the country trying to find a car maker that would work with us. No one wanted to. So we went to China, and we found three models that we really liked. We stripped them down to the chassis, brought them over here, filled them all up with American parts, and now we have the most American-made small pickup truck in America, and it's all electric.
What's the price factor on that? Is it equivalent to what the other cars are going at, or more or less, or what?
The pickup trucks will sell for around $25,000.
Hmm.
They'll go about 100 miles on a charge. It takes about 4 to 5 hours to recharge it, which takes about a dollar's worth of electricity. So you could drive the pickup truck 100 miles a day for about $30-$35 a month, which will save the average person $5,000 to $6,000 a year. That's straight to the bottom line. That's like getting a $6,000 a year raise.
And saves the planet.
And it saves the planet, correct. And the trucks are fast. The cars will go 100 miles an hour. They handle well. They look good. And the cars are coming in around $18,000 or $19,000. By the time you get your $3,000 rebate for buying it, you're driving it for free.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm over on your site, and I ask everyone to bounce on over there too. ArcOfMillionsOfYears.com. And and kind of go through that site a little bit and get to know Dr. Brooks Agnew. You're doing the book that you're doing. You said there's three volumes now, right? So this is the the Ark of Millions of Years, that it would be the trilogy that you speak of.
Yes, and the final book is called Unlocking the Secret. What we found by the time we got to 1,500 pages about the 2012 phenomenon and the creation of the Earth and the destiny of the Earth and where 2012 leads us, we cracked the Mayan calendar code, we solved the Egyptian mysteries, put everything we could in the books. We found it was pretty much doom and gloom, kind of like the 2012 movie that's coming out. And so we decided to add another book in the third book. It's a part two. It's actually called Unlocking the Secret. And what it reveals to the reader is that we as sentient human beings, conscious, awake beings, we participate in the creation of this universe. And if we do that consciously and on purpose with some training and some awakening, some awareness, we can actually move the universe away from a cataclysm. So 2012 is completely in our hands. We don't have to sit back and wait for the tidal waves. Although, if I were you, I would definitely move away from the coast.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm in Wisconsin, so.
Exactly. You're safe.
Mm-hmm. Well, not far from the Great Lakes, so. I'd feel a little bit more safer if I was about 100 miles closer to Illinois, but I think we're still on pretty safe ground right here.
Yep, I think what we're looking at are 500 to 600 meter high waves hitting the coasts.
And you're thinking that's going to all start at 2012, or it should be pretty well finished by then, or it's just going to be one big bang?
I think it's going to crescendo at that time, mm-hmm. But we're going to start seeing these rogue waves, these subsonic waves that are going along with the Gulf Stream, they're going to start turning into the shore.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been seeing a lot of strange weather already. But, of course, that always happens when you're switching from one age to another.
Yep, yep. It does.
You know, so, you know, it, if a person studies the cycles, you know, they don't have to be a prophet to figure out that we're in for some earth changes. And,
sure, you know, and maybe even the prophets took advantage of that knowledge.
Yeah, I've often thought that, you know, but who am I? Who am I, Brooks?
You know, one day in June, we had hail in Beijing, New Jersey, Orange County, Sydney, Australia, and Mexico, all at the same time, all on the same day.
Yeah. You this picture that you have on your website, Ark of Millions of Years. You got a picture of a cross with I believe it's sitting on Earth, or it's sitting on some sort of a globe. And then you got I can't make that one out, Krishna or something like that. Is that? But then the other one, it shows a wormhole. Is that what you're trying to depict there, is a wormhole?
Right.
Is that leading to time travel? Shifting into the other dimensions?
That's what it's more like right there. We actually have two chapters called The Union of the Polarity. It's in Volume 1 and Volume 2. And it actually talks about how what's called a rogue planet or a free-floating planet can drift into a wormhole and end up in a different part of the universe.
You think that's what the Earth is like?
There's evidence that Earth has done that. Earth is not from this solar system. And there's a lot of evidence that some of the Earth is very young and some of the Earth is very old, and they could not have come from the same pile of dust.
Well, see, I only got the first book, so I'm lost on this, on your Volume 2 and your Volume 3, except, you know, what I can see, you know, on your pictures. So now, okay, so you got me on that one, that the Earth is not of this solar system, or of this dimension.
Well, some of it is of this dimension, and some of it isn't, and it's getting ready to go back.
Which was happened in 2012.
Yes.
Hmm. And that's in Volume 3.
That's in Volume 3.
Okay, I gotta get that book because I, you know. So it's basically phase shifting. Or as I call it, phase shifting. I don't know what you call it.
Now, your listeners should know that if they go to that website and they buy the trilogy, they are going to get Volumes 1 and 2 on audio for free.
Oh, okay.
So if they're not great readers, don't worry about it. I read it for you.
Oh, okay.
Volume 3 you'll have to read.
And you still had a voice, huh?
Yeah,
okay.
I couldn't afford to hire any other voice, so you're stuck with mine.
I tried doing that with, I think it was Living in the Light, my book, and I got about halfway through and I lost my voice. Okay, now, when you click onto that link, it takes you to Amazon.com, Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 3 paperback, and then it's showing...
Well, that's if you click on the picture. If you go further down...
Uh-huh.
On that same page, there are links directly to our PayPal bookstore.
Oh.
And that's where you're going to get the audio links.
Oh, okay. So add all three to cart for $55.24. Okay.
And that's a great deal. I mean, all three books, a little over 1,500 pages, and you get 45 hours of reading.
Yeah. Well, no, it's definitely a good deal. And especially with this, the information that you're giving in Volume 3 about, we got a little bit of time, so explain Volume 3 about the Earth being not of this Earth, of this plane, of
well,
this
there,
universe?
There are two theories. One is that two galaxies collided, the Sagittarius Galaxy and the Milky Way Galaxy. Earth was stripped out of that galaxy by our Sun and Jupiter and placed into this orbit. That's one theory. When we talk about cosmology, sometimes we want to talk about how solar systems form. There are two theories for Earth and our Moon. One is called the Moon Capture Theory, and of course the other one's called the Earth Capture Theory. In the first theory, Earth was going around the Sun, minding its own business, eating cookies and drinking milk, and along came the Moon and fell into a very slow orbit around our Earth. That theory has been shot down. It doesn't hold any water. It's been disproven. The other theory is that the Moon was in orbit around our Sun, and Earth came in and fell into this orbit and caught up with the Moon and fell into orbit around the Moon. That is the prevailing theory for cosmologists.
And where did it come from? Where did Earth come from?
Earth came from the Sagittarius Galaxy, they say, because of its vastly different composition from any of the other planets in our solar system, including our own Moon.
Right.
Now,
I never thought about that.
What we say is that there was an Earth here, and it was very old, 4.5 billion years old. There were beings living on it. It was one-third its present size. All the continents fit together nicely. It had some water that fit in between the mountains all over the continents that we have now on our planet.
Mm-hmm.
And as the new Earth came in and merged with this one, it being a much higher energy planet than this one, there was a great cataclysm, and the crust broke apart and reformed with this new planet taking up the rest of the space. Now, when you look at the ocean floor of Earth, the very oldest ocean floor of Earth is 70 million years old. The youngest is less than 10 million years old. But when you look at the continents, they are 4.5 billion years old. They're also covered with seashells and all kinds of things that belong in the bottom of the ocean.
Right.
So when you combine these two geological facts with the theory that it is very possible for two forms of matter to occupy the same space at the same time as long as they vibrate at different frequencies,
right,
like us, you know, we're the peas and carrots and minerals that make up our human bodies, but we're also this very high energy animated being living on the inside, animating this body.
Right.
So in that sense, the Earth, the planet Earth, in some respects, is alive. It has a spirit side and it has a temporal side.
Right. Which makes total sense to me.
And to a lot of people, and as they read the book, they start seeing how the ancient prophets, ancient scientists, modern thinkers, and even physicists are supporting that idea in their own way.
So now what's happening is this Earth is ready to make that shift into another dimension, basically. Right?
Yes. And actually what we're seeing now is an allergic reaction of the Earth to the activities of mankind.
Right. I've heard that, like, these various viruses that people are getting now, it's basically antibiotic of Mother Earth to protect herself from what she looks at as like a disease.
That's a good point. I didn't think of it that way. Yes, exactly. Sort of like an immune reaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we either change. So this is going to be making a shift 2012. So the vibration of Earth is changing. and thus we have to change we have to increase our vibration to match the vibration of Earth in order to go with her when she goes wherever she's going.
That's exactly right. There's a synchronicity, a synchronizing that is done between the spirits that live on the Earth and the various parts of Earth. And it doesn't take a real brilliant person to turn on the news and see that there's a very dark-hearted part of the Earth as far as people living on it. There are also groups, and they're getting larger every day, of very enlightened people, very awake people. There is sort of a renaissance of spirituality going on right now. Now, I don't mean that religion is gaining ground. It's not.
No.
But spirituality is, and there's a huge difference.
And once we reach a critical mass point, the consciousness should shift, right?
That's exactly the theory. We state mathematically that the universe is the mathematical result of all the sentient beings in it, whether they're conscious or not. The idea is to awaken enough people and empower enough people so that they can work their consciousness with intent on purpose toward a more positive, higher vibrational point. And when we do that, we change a significant number of the population of the sentient beings in the universe. The universe must shift.
Mm-hmm. And so how does this fit in, or maybe it even doesn't, with what you're trying to do up there at the North Pole?
It fits in because it's sort of a rallying point. You know, we don't need a prophet. We don't need a second coming. We don't need a crystal or a song or a mission. What we need is to align ourselves with a single point of focus. And if we can make that single point of focus, making ourselves one with our planet, with an expedition that is aimed at really revealing the heart of Earth, what's living inside of her, if it is an advanced civilization, it's going to be pretty easy to introduce. And if it is an advanced civilization, and I can't really say how I know this because I don't know, but...
Well, based on Admiral Byrd, they were.
Yeah, based on that alone, it's there. But based on input that has come to me and other members of the team, there's sort of a unity event that could take place. And that could be the trigger that lets people know that maybe the purpose of life is not to die with the most toys. Maybe it's to realize that we are eternal beings having a mortal experience, and that we just happen to be alive on the Earth when the Earth is getting ready to go through this change. We are very privileged beings to be here at this time.
Yeah, we really are. And we've chosen that as well, you know, to be here. But of course, I think most of us are back, don't you? I've heard anyhow that most of us have chosen to come back to experience this point in time. I suppose there's a few that says, don't want nothing to do with it, just to wake me up when it's all over, huh? But
well,
in our case, we're here.
Yeah, we've met young souls, and we've met very old souls.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all here, and we're all alive, and there's over almost 7 billion of us here. We might as well have some unity over something.
Yeah. folks, what I want you to do is go to the website again. And it's ARK, A-R-K, of millions, that's with an S, of years.com. ARK of millions of years.com. That, for your own sake, okay, I want you to scroll down, and then I want you to click onto that site where it takes you over to Amazon. You'll be about three-quarters of the way down on the site. You just take it on down, and you'll see like three pictures there. And then it'll say, I'm trying to find it. Oh, yeah, right below that, you'll see a link that says click to buy book. That'll take you to Amazon.com. Now, you can buy one, volume 3, and of course, if you've already bought volume 1 and 2, I guess that'd be the way to go. And you can get it right now on sale for $19.34. But if you haven't purchased, instead of just turning around and buying one, I would highly recommend buying all three of them so that you can start with the one and just keep right on following it through until you get to the end. And then I want you to put those books in your suitcase and get on over here to Burlington, Wisconsin and meet Dr. Brooks Agnew, because he's going to be here for the Burlington Vortex Conference. And you'll be able to read these books, and you're going to have questions, and take like some notes, and then bring your books with you, meet with Brooks here, and talk to him, ask your questions, and then get your books signed by him at the Burlington Vortex Conference. You'll be able to find that at our site, burlingtonnews.net/Burlington Vortex Conference. You go over there, be able, and there's places, links there where to show you where you buy your tickets, what the schedule is going to be, where to get your lodging, just about it. But any question you may have, I've answered it on that site. And I heard Brooks that you had Don Schmidt on the other night.
Yes, I had Don Schmidt on X Squared Radio on Sunday night. It was a great interview. He is going to be a great speaker at your Vortex mm-hmm. conference.
He was here last year, and you're right. He's a Wisconsinite too,
I didn't know that.
Yes, he is. He's only about maybe an hour from Burlington. So,
how about that?
And then
Tom Carey's going to be there, and Stanton Friedman, and Jesse Marcel Jr. You got a heck of a lineup.
You betcha. Only the best. if you're going to do something, do it right, right? Well, of course, you know that. You're putting together a North Pole expedition, so.
Well, but I'm really looking forward to your event. It's going to be awesome.
Well, I'm so looking forward to having you here. And we've already got a lot of excitement about you coming in, so.
Well, I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. And you've been getting quite a lot of response down in Arizona about the whole thing, too, right?
Oh, yeah, we're live on KFNX 1100 in Phoenix, and we talk about the Vortex Conference every Sunday night. And lots of people down there in the Sedona market are aligned with this genre, and we hope they all come to Burlington, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Well, Brooks, I thank you so much. I suppose professionally I should be calling you Dr. Brooks Agnew. But thank you so much for being doing the show tonight. And we'll see you at the Burlington Vortex Conference.
All right.
October
30th, 31st,
and November 1st. Okay, and remember, folks, Dr. Brooks Agnew is going to be here. So, go over there, get those books, and then bring them with you to the conference and have him sign them, and visit with him for a while. Okay, thank you. You're listening to BUFO Radio. This is Mary Sutherland, and our guest tonight is Dr. Brooks Agnew, and we would like for you to go over to his site at arcofmillionsofyears.com. Thank you, folks. Good night now, and good night, Brooks.
Good night.